Mace Finnegan, the Donick 102.5 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David James here with you. Ask D Mace, coming up in roughly 20 minutes. And we encourage your participation because I have a giveaway associated with Ask D Mace. So if you win, if you want in on that, I will explain at the end of this segment, so you can get your questions in for Ask D-Mace coming up in the next segment. So, I teased something, and then B-Man on our text line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, says, Adam, don't do that. B-Man has no idea what I'm about to do, but maybe he has a suspicion about what I'm about to do. So, Tennessee and Vanderbilt will not face until the end of the regular season. We have to wait until November 29th, when Vanderbilt goes to Knoxville to take on the Volunteers. So we've got a minute or two or three until we see Tennessee and Vanderbilt on the football field. But I'm going to ask this question, and I know that it's going to drive a lot of Tennessee fans nuts, but I'm going to do it anyway because, again, I'm a fan of maximum chaos. You may have heard that about me. Are Vanderbilt and Tennessee closer than they appear this season? I'm not saying that Tennessee – Tennessee is the better team. Mm-hmm. But I don't think the gap between Tennessee and Vanderbilt is that significant. Am I nuts for saying that? I know a lot of you are about to say yes. But let me go to Willie. Let's go to Willie first. Mm-hmm. Because we've been talking a lot about Diego Pavia. Willie, remember, a few weeks ago we did this exercise. The Athletic ranked all 136 projected FBS starting quarterbacks. Diego Pavia ranked 15th. Joey Aguilar ranked 60th. And I know that Tennessee has a dominant defense, but their offense faces a ton of uncertainty. No more Nico Iamaliava, which means no more Iamali drama. No Dylan Sampson. The Volunteers lost their top three receivers and four starting offensive linemen. So that offense is a work in progress, to say the least. As I just said, Vanderbilt is returning 78% of its offensive production from last season. So again, Tennessee is the better team. But I don't think the gap is as wide between them as I think people would traditionally think. Am I completely off base by saying that?
Well, it depends on how far back you want to go. If you want to go back over the last 30 to 40 years, then I think generally, definitely the answer is yes. I would say...
I'm speaking about this coming season specifically.
I'm talking about the general average gap between Vanderbilt's talent level and Tennessee's talent level. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, over the last 40 years, it's been considerably wider than it is this year. I don't think there's any question. There have been, in the recent years, James Franklin's teams, and Derek Mason, his teams had three wins over Tennessee, but Tennessee was down. Vanderbilt was a better version of themselves than they have been at times. But I think it's an interesting year because Tennessee made the playoffs last year, right? Their standard all of a sudden is back to where they have wanted it to be for a long time. They've gone through a pretty long stretch where they have not been considered a national contender. But their standard is back up to that level. And then they had this happen with Nico, and they are trying to replace some offensive linemen, et cetera. So I think the answer is yes, but I think we all want to see Aguilar play, right? I think Aguilar could be a big – or whoever ends up taking snaps for Tennessee, that's the key.
Yeah, it is going to be the key. I think because UT lost so many weapons, either through the draft or they chose to transfer, and two of the biggest notable ones were the quarterback and the receiver, Squirrel White. I think he transferred to – where did Squirrel White transfer to? I forget the school. But then Nico obviously went to UCLA.
Florida State.
Florida State, yes. And Nico goes to UCLA. Now, even though Nico didn't wow anyone last year, I think it still maybe end up being the biggest loss. I think second may be Squirrel White because he was a guy, a veteran guy on your team that knew the offense in and out. So these other young receivers are going to have to pick their game up. But I think UT may have lost too much at one time. And then if you don't know who your quarterback is, and Aguilar may turn out to be great. He's a transfer. He may turn out to be great. But if he doesn't, if he's just okay, then I think that that battle between, you know, Vandy and UT, I think for this year, I think it's more even than not. And I'm only talking this year. I'm not talking moving forward because, listen, in the world of NIL, your team could look one way one year, and you can be a whole different team the next year because guys are leaving, transferring other places. And then obviously you're getting transfers, and it seems like that's what's happening to UT. So it may be just this year that Vandy is a lot closer to UT from a football standpoint than not. But once they get in the season, that'll change. That'll tell the story, period. But if you're just looking at the two teams now, knowing what UT lost, knowing that it's a question mark at the quarterback position, I would tend to say that they're a little bit closer than what people may want to realize.
By the way, B-Man said, Adam, you aren't nuts. You are bonkers. Let's go to Adam from Portland on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Adam, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Adam, that's a good question. I don't think you're crazy at all. And the reason, yeah, Tennessee's better, but if you have a good quarterback and a good coach, it can close a lot of gaps and forgive a lot of problems that you have. And that this is a question I'll ask you to answer your question. If you take Clark Lee and Diego Pavia and put them on Tennessee, how much better are they last year? And I think Heupel's good. I think him and Clark Lee are probably the same level, in my opinion. Pavia is so much better. So if you were to take them and put them on Tennessee, how far does Tennessee go last year?
It's a good question, but I think you have to factor in that Pavia is not the type of passer that Josh Heupel looks for. Like, Pavia is not a fire the ball to the sideline slant. You know, he is in the perfect offense for his skill set. Fair to say?
Yes.
D. Mason, that's not exactly what Josh Heupel, I don't think, is looking for a quarterback. So I don't know if you would.
Take Clark, he and Clark Lee, and put him in
Tennessee. So you're bringing the whole offense over?
No, like, just Pavia and Clark with what Tennessee had last year.
I think Heupel is a pretty good coach.
No, I think Heupel is a good coach, but I think also we're going to start to find out that Heupel's system, do not draft a quarterback out of it. Just don't. It's not going to work out well for you, I don't think.
I think the question is for Tennessee. The offense faces a massive rebuild again. No Iamaliava, no Dylan Sampson. Top three receivers are gone. Four offensive linemen are gone. The defense continues to be strong despite losing James Pierce and Omar Norman Lott. They still got Jermaud McCoy, Joshua Josephs. Their defense is going to be very good. The question is, does that make up for the significant losses on the offensive end? While there is more continuity with Vanderbilt's offense, they have a top quarterback. They're bringing back a tight end in Eli Stowers. If you read mock drafts already for 2026, there are a lot of them that have Stowers as the first tight end drafted next year. So I'm just wondering, when you consider all of those things, if the gap is tighter than we traditionally believe.
Tighter, maybe. I still think Tennessee is at the forefront of resources, of NIL money. They're trying to overcome, in my mind, a bump in the road where you had something that was not expected. Losing your quarterback when they lost him, that was not something that they foresaw. But, you know, replacing four offensive linemen, I think Tennessee is much better equipped to do that. I think Vanderbilt is going to be always relying on a Barton Simmons and Clark Lee, their eye for the talent, the Pavia types, right? The Eli Stowers types, who maybe were not eye-popping, obvious. I think Barton Simmons uses the term in the Netflix, we have to look past the obvious prospects. The obvious prospects are going to get gobbled up by Tennessee and Ohio State and Alabama. Even with this run of success that they've had, they've still got to find the right fits, and they've got to be smart with their money, because even though they're in the NIL game much better now than they were a couple years ago, they were a year and a half behind everybody in the league with NIL. But That being said, I still don't think they're spending as much on players as Tennessee.
Let's go to James in Ashland City on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. James, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Yes, I just want to – I mean, I know we're talking about Tennessee and comparing Vanderbilt. I want to just stand it out to the whole SEC. Here's what I know and what I don't know. What I do know is the following teams have returning quarterbacks in the SEC that I think that you have to account for giving them an edge. You know, Sellers from South Carolina, Lagway from Florida, Diego for Vanderbilt. What we don't know is, and this applies to Georgia and Alabama, we don't know how good the quarterbacks for Georgia and Alabama, and we don't know who the quarterback right now for Tennessee is. There's no guarantee that it's Aguilar. Josh Heupel has made it clear that he's going to open up that quarterback competition. And Derek, you know this is the best thing to do, and the reason why is because it creates morale boosting in the locker room when you do that. You can't just crown one guy and say he's the starter. So we don't know what we have at Tennessee. What we do know is that the teams I just mentioned, in my opinion, you got to give them a little leg up. I don't follow recruiting and who transfer from where to where. But getting back to what you guys are talking about, I definitely think that there's no receiver on Tennessee's team or tight end that's going to match what's-his-name on Vanderbilt's team. And I agree. I think Vanderbilt has closed the gap a lot, and I can't wait to watch that game. Love the show. Love the station. You guys have a great weekend, and look forward to talking to you sometime next week.
Thanks, James.
Thank you, James.
This is my question along those lines. Pavia will have all the attention going into the season that he didn't have last year. Also, their offense, I think, surprised a lot of teams. That was different. So now can they – they don't have that element of surprise on either front. Hey, Vanderbilt's better than you think they are, and they've got a scheme that had some deception to it. So what do they bring to the table this year? Is their overall talent level and experience level good enough to offset the fact that they don't have that, the deception and the sneak attack?
Well, I mean, they're not going to come at you the same way. They're not. They can't. I think Clark Lee, it would be coaching malpractice if he came with the same sort of game plan this year. Why? Because people are looking for it now. Either you got to do it better or you got to change it up some. Diego has to find a way to beat teams through the air. He's going to have to figure that out.
They need another skill player, too, to emerge.
Absolutely. So I love the moxie. I love the toughness and tenacity that he shows. But if he doesn't develop a little bit more in the passing game, people are going – these defenses are too good. These coordinators, especially at the top end, are too good that they're going to figure it out. So I'm sure Clark Lee, they've tweaked that offense, and hopefully another year, this will be – I mean, this is Diego's offense, but if he can develop a little bit more as a passer, that allows Vanderbilt to do more on offense. Right now, everybody knows, like, okay, this is what he may throw 15, 20 times. This is what he – okay, we just need to stop it. Well, they have to show more of a threat through the air. And it may end up being Stowers being the guy that just opens up the passing game for Vandy.
Let's go to Kyle on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Kyle, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. As a Vols fan, I do believe that Vandy is a little bit closer to Tennessee than normal years. But what does that really say about Vandy? I still believe that Tennessee's two or three touchdowns better if they played today. Hopefully, Pavia is healthy at the end of the season to play Tennessee if they're going to keep him running the ball so much. And as much as he's talked all season, I played safety back in the day. I loved it when other teams' offense, like running backs, quarterbacks, ran their mouth. You're going to get popped eventually. It just takes one good hit to knock some sense into you, man.
Thank you for the call, Kyle. Well,
I think that's been a concern of mine from the start because Pavia,
he
doesn't
some hits.
Shy away. Yeah. He doesn't shy away. And they have relied on him as a runner. And that's something Clark Lee has said, look, you've got to let him be himself. It's like with Tim Tebow. Boy, did they go to that well for a couple years. He ran the ball a lot, but his body held up. Pavia did get banged up during the season last year.
And yeah, so, he did.
So I think it's a legit question is can he keep himself on the field?
I think if he's able to keep himself on the field, he's going to be dealing with some type of injury because it's just the nature, one, of the game, and then the style of play that he brings on the field. So he's going to be dealing with something. You just hope that it's not too debilitating where he can't give you majority of himself. He can't be himself out there. If he's hobbled with an ankle injury or something like that, he can't be the Diego Pavia that we've seen. So that's why I say Clark Lee, he has to change things up a little bit to keep the defense on their heels.
Let's go to Justin in Greenbrier on our text line, who says, Willie doesn't want to say that Vandy is better because he doesn't want to jinx the season.
That's Coach Willie. I like the Vanderbilt mentality of chip on your shoulder, mm-hmm. underdog, and they have to keep that. I like the ambush. I like being the sneak attack team that's sneaky good. And that was what was fun about last year. So I always get a little bit jittery as Coach Willie when there's a lot of praise, especially knowing who you have to try to beat. You're trying to beat these. You got to go to Texas. You got to go to Alabama. These are tough teams. You could play a really good game and not be good enough to win that game.
No, you're right. Vandy has they have what they need, and they've added some more pieces. But can they still do some of the same things they were able to do last season? Because one thing I do know is if a team sees what you do and you do it effectively, best believe in the offseason, they're going to be preparing for just that. So I'm sure each team has ran through every play that Diego has played in a Vanderbilt uniform. And they want to make sure that if he does win you a game, then by golly, he was just that type of guy, because they're not going to allow him to do some of the things that he did last year, I don't think.
Gentry in Nashville says, Squirrel White didn't do anything for us last year. Heupel has proven he can plug and play at quarterback. If you're giving Pavia credit for his razor-thin tightroping last year, you have to give Hype the benefit of the doubt that his quarterback situation isn't dire. And Tennessee didn't just prevail last year. They spotted Vandy 14 and scored nearly 40 unanswered on the road. Godspeed in Neyland.
They played really well last mm-hmm. year. I was impressed. That was offensively especially, I thought that was one of Tennessee's sharpest, and Nico in particular, one of his sharpest games.
They blitzed Vandy, and they had like two or three huge plays against Vandy. So maybe Vandy can stop those plays this year.
615-737-1025. We will continue to take your reaction. Are Vanderbilt and Tennessee football closer than they appear this season? We will bring in, we're going to pivot. We're going to bring in Chad Withrow coming up next. He knows a thing or two about Tennessee football. We'll ask him this question and many other questions coming up next. We will have Ask D-Mace a little bit later, but we are going to be joined next by Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. Coming up next, 615-737-1025. This week's Nashville's best deal is Boomba's Pizza and Watch Bar. Award-winning gourmet pizzas, handcrafted beverages, and get swept up in the thrill of live sports at Boomba's Pizza and Watch Bar, your go-to spot for good times. Boomba's has locations in East Nashville, Spring Hill, and Murfreesboro, so get half off a $30 gift card now while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals. D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 1025. The Game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Bingen. Pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Chad Withrow of Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. Chad, so glad you can join us on DVD. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Hey, I appreciate you guys working with me time-wise. I've been listening to you, excited to join you in this new time slot. I heard Willie reference himself as Coach Willie earlier. I think very similarly about the teams I cover as Coach Willie, and unfortunately Coach Chad, who coaches his 10-year-old daughter's travel softball team, has practice coming up in 1 hour. So it's constantly changing times and doing different things, and you guys know all about that. So I appreciate you working with me and excited to talk about this topic you guys have been hitting.
Of course. So you know a thing or two about Tennessee football. So let me pose to you the question that we were just talking about. Are Vanderbilt and Tennessee football closer than they appear this coming season?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're closer. How they both appear, I'm not so sure, because here's the thing with Vandy and Tennessee a year ago. Like, if you talk to a Tennessee fan and they act like they weren't scared to death of Vandy in that game, they're lying to you. The Tennessee fans were terrified of that game because all Vandy could do was wreck Tennessee's season, right? They had a home game. They had a chance to knock Tennessee out of the playoffs, and Tennessee fans were terrified of that game. And then the Vols start that game by spotting Vanderbilt 14 points on a kickoff return, a quick fumble, and a quick Vandy touchdown. Now, from that point on, Tennessee dominated. That game wasn't that close, and it certainly wasn't close after that 14-0 lead for Vandy. But the biggest part of it to me, guys, was Diego Pavia wasn't close to 100%. And I don't think he was in much of the month of November in last season. So the way they run him and the way they run that offense and the way he plays with such reckless abandon, I really have a hard time believing that Vandy's going to go to Knoxville at the end of the year and play Tennessee close in Neyland Stadium. Because I'm not sure Diego Pavia is going to make it through an entire season healthy enough to be that effective late in the year. He wasn't very effective against Tennessee at the end of the year last year at home, so I don't see that happening again. Now, on the Tennessee side of it, here's what's nuts to me, is they're preseason 18th in the country, and I know that the program is in a better spot than they've been in years, probably since 95 to 99, in terms of overall record and health of the program. The fact that we don't even know who their starting quarterback is, and their presumed starting quarterback left after spring practice, after getting 100% of first-team reps. And yet everybody in the country still looks at Tennessee and says, oh, yeah, they're top 20. And I agree with them. Their defense is going to be really good. I think whoever Josh Heupel puts at quarterback, they're going to design a plan that's going to work for that quarterback well enough to be 8-4 or maybe 9-3 and be right around the top 20 in the country. So I think that's a really good sign for Tennessee. I think Vandy's a lot better. They're going to be fun to watch this year. But the same reasons Coach Willie is worried, I would be worried, too, about Vanderbilt in year two in this Diego Pavia offense.
Let's continue on Diego Pavia. I know that you have watched all of Any Given Saturday, the SEC football docuseries on Netflix. Diego Pavia is prominently featured in that series. A lot of sound bites that have already gone viral, especially a few comments he's made about Tennessee. Here's my question for you, Chad. Will Diego Pavia's bravado backfire on the Commodores? Because he has certainly put a target on his back with the comments he's made over the past number of months.
Absolutely not. I love Diego Pavia. That attitude is exactly what Vandy needed, and it's his attitude that's rubbed off on the rest of the team, and I think it's a big part of the reason, and the biggest part, that they were so successful a year ago. So, no, I think he gives them the swagger they need, the confidence they need, that chip on the shoulder. You know, Vandy last year, and by the way, I love the Vandy portions of that docuseries. Clark Lee was far and away the most likable coach of all of them that was featured. I love Diego Pavia. He sounds ridiculous at times, sure, but he believes it, and I believe that he believes it. And if you're being completely genuine, then I'm never going to criticize someone for doing that. And that's how I feel about Diego Pavia. It's exactly what Vanderbilt needed. He provided that spark for them. Now, the biggest comment from Pavia, everybody's talking about, you know, what he said about Tennessee or what he said at different points. The most under-discussed line from the whole series, and I don't know about this, but when they were preparing for the Auburn game, he talked about the chip on his shoulder that he went to Auburn with New Mexico State, beat Hugh Freeze, and that Hugh Freeze didn't offer him a scholarship and didn't want him to transfer to Auburn. And he said, that would have been a tough offer to pass up if Auburn would have come after me. And that's what he was thinking going into that game, is I'm going to show this guy now with Vanderbilt that he made a mistake. I'm thinking about the bizarro world of college football. If Hugh Freeze would have said after that New Mexico State loss, man, this guy's really good, we need him, let's bring him in. What Hugh Freeze's job situation would look like compared to Clark Lee's if Auburn would have gone all in on Diego Pavia instead of Vanderbilt. Because while he didn't outright say it, he pretty much said, yeah, if Auburn came calling, I'm probably at Auburn and not at Vanderbilt. But boy, what is Hugh Freeze's loss is Vanderbilt and Clark Lee's game.
The thing you got to love about Diego, he's going to be honest, Chad, and you would probably have never heard probably like 10 years ago a guy at a university saying, man, I really wanted to, you know, go to that university, or it would have been nice to, you know, pass up I don't know if I would have been able to pass up an offer from that university. But in today's society, these kids are open, and you got to love it with Diego. He is as open and honest, I think, as I've seen a quarterback, you know, at least at Vandy has been. But looking at UT, Chad, I know that last year's offense, they averaged 35 points a game, which I believe was third in the SEC. The year before that, they were a little bit less. But the offense this year, this past season, it just didn't, to me, it didn't resemble, even though it scored more points, it didn't resemble the offense of 2 years ago.
No, I totally agree. By the way, you're right on the honesty of Pavia. Mm-hmm. And you know the C-Mace, being around a lot of locker rooms that you were around throughout your college and pro career, you can tell when a guy's faking it. Mm-hmm. You can tell when a guy's genuine and real. Like, I've watched Pavia, and I think, this guy's not faking it. There's no BS with him. He truly believes what he's saying, even if it sounds ridiculous to everyone else.
and it often does.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Like, I think he sounds ridiculous, but I'm like, I'd love for him to be my teammate. You know, I'd love to go to war with that guy. That's the dude I want on my side if you're playing a sporting event. I'd love to play doubles ping pong with Diego with that attitude. I'd like my chances. We could play flip cup together, and he'd probably win too. But no, Tennessee's offense was not what it's been last year. But I think a lot of credit goes to Josh Heupel, because they knew that Nico could only do so much and that his strengths were never going to be going through a progression the way that Hendon Hooker, and I know that there's been a lot of talk about Tennessee's offense and Chris Collinsworth criticizing it and what Hendon Hooker looks like in the NFL, and some of that is definitely warranted. But I'll say, when Hendon Hooker was Josh Heupel's quarterback, he could get to a second or third option. It wasn't always just look at one receiver and then take off running if he's not there. That's what it was with Nico a year ago. But Dylan Sampson was great. Tennessee's running backs, whoever's back there, has been really good under Heupel, and they really stressed the run game, and it worked in a lot of games last year. So I think that's really a sign of how good Josh Heupel can be. But no, I mean, I completely agree. They've been searching for Hendon Hooker, that type of quarterback, since he left. Joe Milton wasn't it. Nico certainly wasn't it. I don't think Joey Aguilar is going to be it. I don't know about Jake Merklinger. I don't know about George McIntyre. But one thing that we've seen from Heupel is the running backs are going to be productive, whoever he puts back there. And I think Tennessee's got some pretty good running backs, even though they're a little bit unproven this year. And I think that he can devise an offense that can get the most out of the quarterback. Here's what I want to see with this offense, though, D-Mace. Mm-hmm. Use the tight end. They got some good tight ends. I think Miles Kitzelman's really good. I think Desaun Brohm is going to be outstanding. They really need to get back to working the middle of the field, and that's something they didn't do at all with Nico.
Now, I found something very interesting in watching the Any Given Saturday. One of the episodes, it had Brian Kelly. Nobody likes Brian Kelly, but Brian Kelly was on there. But he said something interesting. He was talking to Trace Armstrong, who is his agent. And I think they were discussing Nussmeier. And then he gets off the phone. I guess, you know, they said what they needed to say, and Nussmeier ended up staying. But I found it kind of – it was almost eye-opening in a sense that the coach is talking to his agent, who represents the player on his team. I just – even though we know NIL is out there and agents are out there, to just see how a coach discusses that with his agent, knowing that his agent – is his starting quarterback's agent.
Oh, that jumped out to me too. Mm-hmm. I also noticed that on the time of the call on his car console, it was like 2 minutes and 14 seconds. That's how long the call lasted with Trace Armstrong. And it was a very short conversation. And Brian Kelly said something like, you know, the guy's like, oh, that's, he said, yeah, I share an agent with my starting quarterback. And the guy said, yeah, that's interesting. He's like, yeah, it's certainly something. Definitely interesting. I'm thinking, yeah, conflict of interest is what it really is when you think about that. It's got to be maddening if you're a college coach that's used to a certain level of control to have to deal with your agent who's also repping your quarterback, knowing that your future the next season rests on that quarterback coming back to school and playing with you. I'm with you, D-Mace. That part jumped out to me too. But the fact they were able to get it done, and that Garrett Nussmeier came back to LSU, I mean, that puts all the pressure on Brian Kelly now, because there are no excuses for him. Everyone's expecting a national championship. Hell, Ed Orgeron won a national title at LSU. Les Miles won a national title. If those guys can win it, The expectation is for Brian Kelly to win one also. And now there are no excuses because his star quarterback is coming back. But that jumped off the screen to me too. Just the conflict of interest of what the current college game could be with these guys sharing agents, which happens mm-hmm. in the NFL and other sports too.
Chad Withrow is with us, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. You hear Jonathan Hutton on our show each week as well. Chad's going to be joining us here on DVD. So, Chad, another thing I was reading, because this is really compelling TV. I was binge-watching, and I had no problem continuing to watch, although I have not gotten to the last episode where Vanderbilt gets beat by Tennessee. Wasn't in a hurry to watch that one for some reason. It was much more fun to watch episode three.
I wonder why.
Episode three was much better for me, the Alabama versus Vanderbilt. But there were a number of schools that chose not to let Netflix or whoever was doing this have the access, and I'm wondering what those schools will do if they come around again on this.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm shocked that Eli Drinkwitz wasn't a part of this. I don't know if he was given the opportunity, but I'm thinking that dude, you want to talk about the Diego Pavia of coaches that will say just anything that doesn't always sound the smartest. That's Eli Drinkwitz. I thought he was tailor-made for a series like this, but I don't know if he declined it or just wasn't offered, but I was surprised Missouri wasn't a part of this. Yeah, I think that once everybody watches it, they're going to see that no state secrets were shared and that it's okay to jump in the mix and join. And I hope that a lot more programs get involved. But I got to be honest with you, Vanderbilt was compelling. You know, there was a short part about Kentucky that was probably the most boring part of the whole series. Tennessee was fine. You know, Josh Heupel's never going to get you that excited, but I thought their portions of it were fine. There wasn't a lot of teams that really stood out in the series to me other than Vanderbilt. But I think the collection of all of them together made for some really entertaining episodes. I thought the Florida episode was pretty good, too.
That was a good one. I did think that was good.
All Florida Gators. Yeah, just to show the whole arc of their season from, you know, Billy Napier's definitely fired to, DJ Lagway may be the best quarterback in recent Florida history, and Billy Napier's got an exciting team coming back. To watch all of that take place is really cool. But, yeah, I hope a lot more teams get involved. Texas would be a big one for them to land. You know, the episode six, which focuses on Texas and A&M and Ole Miss and Mississippi State, I thought it was a glaring absence that there was no Lane Kiffin or Steve Sarkisian in that episode, right? It was all about A&M and Jeff Lebby and Mississippi State. So I do hope that more get involved next year. And again, when you've got so much control over it, they're not going to share anything that's going to give away everything for your program. So I wish more coaches would show their actual personalities more and actually let us in a little bit more on their programs, because I don't think you're going to end up giving anything away, especially when you have the producer's cut of the episodes.
Chad, you've watched the rivalry for quite a while, not as long as I have. I guess I'm getting old, but what is your spiciness meter of the Vanderbilt-Tennessee rivalry, not for football, but across the board? I think of what Tony Vitello has done to spice up the baseball rivalry. You've got the Pavia factor in football that's definitely spiced it up. It could go any number of ways, but we know that's going to be sort of must-watch if he's on the field and they're playing a game that has significance, and we think it will. And then the basketball has been interesting with the women's basketball team under Shea Ralph finally breaking through and beating the Vols a couple of times, the Lady Vols. And the basketball is always going to be compelling, I think, especially with Tennessee where they are. I think we're at a good meter right now with an actual rivalry, whereas sometimes some years it's not as exciting as it is right now.
Yeah, and you know, Willie, when we were working together, like going back to the James Franklin years, I think the football part of it was the spiciest. When James Franklin was there and started winning games and competing with Tennessee, that's what's going to fire up the Tennessee fan base more than anything, is when, you know, little brother starts beating you in football, then suddenly it's a rivalry. I felt that way about baseball. I mean, Tim Corbin is daddy of the state, right, to Tennessee, until Tony Vitello got there. So when Vitello flipped it and started beating Vandy regularly, that became the spiciest in-state rivalry going, was Vitello versus Corbin, and now Corbin has wrestled some of that back, and it's a great rivalry once again. you know, the other sports, I don't think football is as spicy as Vandy fans think it is. And I think when you get to episode 7, you'll see what I'm talking about. It was the perfect encapsulation of what Vandy and their fans feel about Tennessee versus what Tennessee and their fans feel about Vandy when Tennessee's winning in football. It's just a very different sense of anger between both fan bases. The basketball part of it, you know, Vandy winning at Memorial last year, and then Jalen Carey being the biggest part of both games, played great in Knoxville, played maybe his best game in Nashville in the upset, and then he transferred to Tennessee. That's interesting to me. That's going to spice up the basketball side of it, that Rick Barnes went and got the guy who hurt them the most when they played Vanderbilt twice. I want to see what he looks like in Tennessee's rotation. But I think the basketball part is getting better because Byington's a really good coach. The women's part of it, certainly getting better. But Willie, you know, I've not always been a big college baseball guy. But I'll say the college baseball rivalry between Tennessee and Vandy, there's not many better in the sport. And I think it's been a ton of fun to watch. And both of those programs are so good. And now that Tennessee's putting major league talent out on the field, it's gotten that much better.
Chad Withrow of Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow has been our guest on DVD. He will join us every Friday. Chad, have a great weekend, and we will chat next week.
This is going to be fun. I get to go back to being Coach Chad now, so I'll be listening to Coach Willie on the way to practice with you guys. So, thank you
if
so
you
much.
Need the Tom Emanski, you know, dynamic practice organization tape, the VHS. If you have a VHS at home, Chad, I'll pass along a copy. I used to work
Willie,
for Tom Emanski.
I keep threatening my family that I'm going to order the bike coach's shorts off Amazon, and I'm going to wear those, and I'm going to have
don't do it
polyester specials.
Remember the hat Fred McGriff put on that he just took out of the box that was on top of his head?
Oh, man, you got to wear some striped socks,
I'm
going
to wear that hat to practice, too. It's going to be perfect.
All right. Try not to damage anyone's mind, Chad.
It's already damaged on my end, so we'll make it work. Thanks,
Chad.
Yep.
615-737-1025. We did pivot a little bit, so if you're wondering, Ask D-Mace will be at 5 o'clock, so I will let you know what the giveaway associated with Ask D-Mace is in the next segment. But Ask D-Mace starting at 5 o'clock. But coming up next, of course, the Tennessee Titans take the field tomorrow in the preseason against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We know we are all going to be paying attention to Cam Ward in his unofficial NFL debut, but which other Titans players will we be watching closely tomorrow in Tampa? We'll discuss that next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Interesting choice, David James.
Really, trying to cheer some people up.
No, yeah, we're like Cheers, man.
I love Cheers.
We telling everybody, come on, come on. hey, we know your name. John. Phil. Samantha. We see you in your car listening.
Greg,
come on in, Greg. Aha, Greg, you thought I missed you back there. Come on in. I see you in that third car, that Nissan. Come on in, buddy. We're taking everybody. We're Cheers.
Calm down, Joshua.
Do we have a Cliff?
He wants to get up in the front, man. Come on.
Do we have a Cliff Clavin? Perhaps.
I don't know.
Maybe.
We can get it.
We'll work on it.
Yes.
So Ask D-Mace is coming up at 5 o'clock. I told you that we will have a prize associated with that, and I will let you know what that is at the end of this segment. But, of course, the Tennessee Titans are on the field for a preseason game tomorrow night in Tampa against the Buccaneers. And look, we all know that we are going to be focusing on Cam Ward. When our show comes on the air at 3 o'clock on Monday, we're going to be talking about Cam Ward. You're going to be talking about Cam Ward. Cam Ward, Cam Ward, Cam Ward. Marsha. Cam Ward, Cam Ward, Cam Ward.
Impressive that Adam, the youngest man on the panel, has the Brady
Remember
Bunch,
that.
The
yes.
Brady Bunch reference.
I shock you often with my deep pop culture knowledge of things that maybe were on before I was born, as I knock over Derek's empty Sprite can here. But let's talk about players other than Cam Ward who we are interested in monitoring tomorrow night in Tampa. So, Derek, excluding Cam Ward, who will you be watching closely when the Titans take on the Bucs tomorrow night?
I don't know if we will get a chance to see much of him. I think Corey Levin, for this reason. because Cushenberry is not going to be ready for the beginning of the season. And even when he gets ready, I think he's going to have to work his way into things. That injury, I predict it won't be until next year that he's truly back to form. So I'm going to be watching Corey Levin in that offensive line very carefully, because to me, that will allow Cam Ward to really sort of show who he can potentially be. If it looks like it did last year with the offensive line, then he has no chance. But I think starting with Corey Levin, because he is sort of the placeholder in the center, is very important to the well-being and the health of the quarterback. Pointing out things. He's a veteran guy. That's a quarterback. He can point out certain things. A quarterback may miss it. But he's your eyes. He's your extra set of eyes for the quarterback and your extra set of ears. So I'm going to be watching Corey Levin in our offensive line.
I'm going to take a little bit of the low-hanging fruit here. In the mini version of just the compelling thing that we're going to watch tonight with Shador, like, we're all going to be paying attention. I don't know if I'm going to tune in and watch every play, but we're all curious just to see if the story develops that Shador Sanders, one way or the other, makes a big impression. So along those lines, I have to say, Xavier Restrepo, right? I mean, there was all of this stuff for a non-drafted free agent wide receiver, and then the story behind it and everything like that. And Restrepo is likely to be in that position late in the game, mm-hmm. where he's going up against the backups for the other team. He will not be in there when Cam Ward is in there, very likely anyway. So can he show people that, hey, yeah, this was not some gimmick. This was not, hey, let me just, kowtow to Cam Ward or whatever was said at the time. Can he look like a legitimate guy out there? So that's one that I was looking at for sure. Just for the story purposes. I don't know if he's going to end up being a significant player for the Titans or not, but I think it would certainly do him well if he shows up, if he makes an impression.
A couple of weeks ago, we attempted to predict, before training camp started, our silliest storylines or controversies of Titans training camp. And mine was that Xavier Restrepo was going to have a breakout game against the Buccaneers, leading everyone to think that he's the second best receiver on the team behind Calvin Ridley. Now, that part's not going to happen. But I can't imagine Restrepo having a touchdown catch or a big catch or something like that and getting a lot of response on Monday about, he needs more playing time. He should be running with the ones, not with Tim Boyle. So we'll see what happens. I think Xavier Restrepo is a good choice. I will stick with the receivers. I'm going to cheat and say both DK and Io Manor, because I agree with what Derek said yesterday when we were having this conversation. The Titans hope that DK and Io Manor grow with Cam Ward, that as Cam Ward matures, so do DK and Io Manor. And I am curious to see how they perform in their first preseason action, knowing that they're going to be in the Titans rotation. There are people who believe that it one point during the season, DK and Io Manor may overtake Tyler Lockett and Van Jefferson in the Titans rotation. So I am looking at DK and Io Manor specifically. Weston Hermitage says, all eyes are on Dan Moore. I don't believe it till I see it. That's a big one. Now, what didn't help Anthony Richardson last night, although, as we talked about at the beginning of the show, a lot of analysts say that it had nothing to do with the offensive line, that Richardson got smoked in that game last night. But I believe three starting offensive linemen did not play for the Colts last night in front of Anthony Richardson. I expect the starting offensive line for the Tennessee Titans to be out there when Cam Ward is out there. And I know that the Buccaneers aren't going to be fielding their best players, but Dan Moore is a good choice as well.
Another choice I would throw into the mix would be Oladejo, and mm-hmm. and then on the secondary side, just, does anybody else jump in and look like they're getting a good edge rush, right? Because that's not really about scheme. Mm-hmm. I just want to see, can anybody like look like they're having a good day beating their man, getting to the quarterback? Because that's such a huge question mark for this team.
And also, I think Gunnar Helm is going to get a lot of playing time. I think at least through the practices that we witness, it's clear that Wiley seems to be falling. Chig, obviously, is the starter. But I think Gunnar Helm is working his way up. So I expect him. That's another guy we need to watch in the game. Because what they were trying to do before they left here, and they were trying to get hit Gunnar Helm in the back and end zone in that seam route, that's what I envision. He's about 6'6", 6'7", maybe giving him some inches. But he's a tall, long body that can go up. He's shown he can go up and make the catch. I want to see how they use him in tomorrow's game up the middle. So that's another person I'm going to be watching.
615-737-1025. The Tennessee Titans take the field tomorrow against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I believe a 6:30 kickoff for that game. Cam Ward's unofficial NFL debut as he starts for the Titans against the Buccaneers. But it is 5 o'clock. It is Friday. It is time for Ask D-Mace, 615-737-1025. I said there was a prize, so here it is. The person who asks the best question to Derek during Ask D-Mace will win a pair of tickets to see Robert Randolph at Fog Street Lawn Club on August 15th, 1 week from today. So best question for Derek, the person who asks it, will win a pair of tickets to see Robert Randolph at Fog Street Lawn Club next Friday, August 15th. If you haven't done Ask D-Mace before, you can ask him a football question, a sports question. You can also ask him about life. Mostly, everything is on the table. I do screen the questions, so be polite.
Say why.
Be polite, but anything, mostly anything, is on the table. 615-737-1025. Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.